Your weekly counter-propaganda left opinion program with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, it's Dennis Bernstein bringing you news and headlines. Also at 11, Between the Covers welcomes author Kathy Camper and her series Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, about a trio of friends who experience out-of-this-world adventures in their quest to build the most epic lowrider. At 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, an encore presentation of Renters' Rights Comics, an informational comic with an aim to educate renters. And all of this great programming because of KBOO members and your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. It's 8:59. Press Watch next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library in Portland. Oregon Action Plan is a series of events to inform and empower our community. This first event will focus on immigration in Oregon. How is what's happening on the national level affecting people in Oregon? What are organizations doing to support and protect their communities? And what can allies do to be effective and supportive? Again, that's Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights, on Sunday, March 19th at the Concordia University Library, 2800 Northeast Liberty Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Good morning and happy International Men's Day. There's 363 and a quarter of those. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'm probably like you, in the sense that I learned a long time ago that I needed to cop an attitude if I expected to keep my sanity while living in the United States. It's the catch-22 thing. If living here doesn't drive you nuts, you must be crazy. Pardon my use of brutal language, but it's just a fact that a rational consideration of the real history and aims and control of this society reveals a seething and unbridled criminality. To be sure, there's more to the culture than that. But the curse of race war isn't an aberration, nor is it a temporary condition. It's the underlying premise of the USA. Howard Zinn, the late historian, revealed the writings of contemporaries of the genocide of the original peoples here, revealed in their own words, the white settlers' glee at incinerating whole villages in the name of their God. Likewise, the burning hatred of whites versus African people continues unabated today with mass incarceration and with the election of the demagogue who promised to hold off the bad hombres with a giant Berlin Wall for the world to live. Whiteness must die. There's no doubt about it. And as a white-designated person, I'm looking forward to the liberation. I've elaborated in many previous shows about whiteness and its use as a false status and even more bogus race marker. It's one of the most dangerous lies ever invented. Perhaps its only rival that I'm thinking about today after International Women's Day is the idea that manliness is better than femininity. Both ideas depend heavily on denying that they exist in practice. That is, somehow sexism and white supremacy are in the past rather than driving the economy. Yesterday was International Women's Day, and I enjoyed the broadcast here on KBOO, which incidentally are still available to you as podcasts on KBOO.fm. The Google search engine dedicated one of their animated Google Doodle displays to the day, which is fine in and of itself, but a look at the tableau that they showed quite an emphasis on child rearing. Quite an emphasis. Nearly every panel, and we need to talk about that. Not just about Google, but I mean child rearing is a human activity, and it has been exaggeratedly placed in the role of women. Exaggeratedly. And there's excuses for that. Oh, women have breasts. Well, so what? How do you account for the other 17 to 20 years? By identifying child rearing as exclusively women's work, a false and superior class has been created, the class of unencumbered men. It's still true that when women earn only $4 to men's $5, that women are, in other words, paid 80% of what men make for the same work, that's just the tip of the iceberg. And the fact is that 35% of women who have children living with them are living in poverty despite their labor. And another way to look at it is 70% of the people in poverty in the U.S. are women and children. The excuse for this is to blame the victim. Women, the men say, might have to leave work for childcare, and thus can't be depended on for continuous work. So not only is the physical and emotional and mental labor of child rearing shoved almost exclusively onto women, women are then blamed for their exhaustion. And the exhaustion is real. And that doesn't even get up to the work of keeping the home in general. This regime of sexism and racism means profit. It sets the mind up to accept the gross injustice of billionaire rule under capitalism or any other hierarchy. Any challenge to the hierarchy of male and white is met ultimately with rape and bullets. Respectively, rape and bullets. And if that sounds brutal, it's because the society runs on brutality. And as I've said, I have to cop an attitude to get through this experience, that is, of being a human being and a beneficiary of white supremacy. My attitude is that I will consider these truths and act accordingly. That means I must be a factor against white supremacy. For our rulers, it is insufficient that we should be exploited within these borders. By setting us up with a false sense of exceptionalism, patriotic pride, we can be persuaded to participate in the crime of empire, even to the extent of sending our youth to die in battles for the enrichment of oil speculators and arms merchants. This works doubly well, since the sacrificed can then be made into holy martyrs, whose brave virtue and dismemberment and death cleanses the whole enterprise morally. It's a great and bloody joke. You can't question the war, because it has already eaten your heroes. Loyalty, soldiers are told, is the highest virtue, and that lie is then encouraged to spread outward. So we come to the racist, fascist regime that is now in power in all branches of the federal government. It is more openly racist and fascist than the previous regime, which was also constructed and enforced for the benefit of billionaires. Let's look at a few items on the menu for our delectation, brought to you by the laughable mockery of democratic elections, and I'm going to use Snopes.com for this, ironically, because I've had my criticisms, a little sloppiness regarding Mr. Sanders, I believe it was about, but Snopes is respected for good reason. And they write, legislation introduced by Republicans during President Trump's first 2 months in office included bills to terminate the Environmental Protection Agency, redistribute federal school funding via voucher programs, terminate the Department of Education, repeal a wildlife protection rule, repeal the Affordable Care Act, defund Planned Parenthood, establish a national right to work law, strip federal funds from sanctuary cities, criminalize abortion, and place new sanctions on Iran. And their rating for this is, ding, mostly true. That's Snopes, and they write, in March 2017, social media users began sharing an article published by Resistance Report, a left-leaning news and opinion website purporting to list nine terrifying bills advanced by congressional Republicans while Americans were distracted by claims and counterclaims regarding the Trump administration's alleged ties to Russia. The Republican-led Congress, from the website, is wasting no time forcing through the most horrendous bills seen in decades while America's eyes are on Russia. With both houses of Congress solidly under Republican control, there's little in the way to stop House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from sending bills to President Trump's desk that embody the most dangerous aspects of radical right-wing ideology. The list has since grown to 10 bills, with the addition of legislation to place new sanctions on Iran, and gone viral with more than one version in circulation. Value judgments aside, and they write, we invite readers to make up their own minds about how horrendous or dangerous these bills are. They write, we can verify that the following 10 pieces of legislation were, in fact, introduced by Republicans and are, in fact, real, although their content has, in some cases, been misrepresented. And not all of these bills have any clear shot at passage. Here's the full list with brief summaries and links to sources for more information. Of course, I won't be giving you the links, and you're going to have to pull up Snopes to find that. First, H.R. 861, to terminate the Environmental Protection Agency, introduced on the 3rd of February, 2017, by Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican from Florida, and three Republican co-sponsors. The body of H.R. 861 is only one sentence long. Quote, the Environmental Protection Agency shall terminate on December 31st, 2018, end quote. The text of the bill does not stipulate what would become of existing EPA regulations and their enforcement, but Gaetz has indicated that he intends jurisdiction to fall to individual states. Now, speaking for myself and departing from Snopes here, obviously that was just a shot in the dark. Well, maybe not quite a shot in the dark, since there's such sentiment behind it with the appointment to the EPA of a fox in the hen house. There's no such thing as a one-sentence bill. So that falls under, just kidding, except for his hatred, you know, except for his loyalty to his corporate masters, which, as, you know, Republican Florida man, he is determined to show. And as I was mentioning before, for some people, loyalty is the highest moral, which is a weird thing to think. Maybe not if you're a dog. Second, returning to the text, H.R. 610, tax dollars for private schools. H.R. 610, as known as the Choices in Education Act of 2017, would change how federal tax dollars are distributed to qualified states for education spending, mandating that all such monies would be awarded in block grants, a portion of which must go into voucher programs for use by parents to pay for private and home schools. The bill was introduced by Representative Steve King, a Republican from Iowa. With three Republican co-sponsors, supporters say the legislation is intended to widen educational options for all Americans, though critics maintain it amounts to at least a partial defunding of public schools. You think? Third, H.R. 899. To terminate the Department of Education, like H.R. 861, which would get rid of the EPA, H.R. 899 simply calls for the termination of the Department of Education by the end of 2018. It was introduced by Representative Thomas Massey, Republican of Kentucky, with six Republican co-sponsors, including Representative Matt Gaetz, who introduced the bill to terminate the EPA. President Trump's Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, has stated she would be fine with having herself worked out of a job. Fourth, House Joint Resolution 69 to repeal a wildlife protection rule in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, introduced by Representative Don Young, Republican of Alaska, on 7th of February 2017, and passed by the House 9 days later, would negate U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regulations prohibiting certain types of non-subsistence hunting for the purposes of predator control on federally protected lands in Alaska. Supporters of H.A.R. 69 say the reversal is necessary to redress an illegal jurisdictional power grab by the federal government. How dare they? Fifth, H.R. 370 to repeal the Affordable Care Act. According to Reuters, congressional Republicans tried more than 60 times to repeal or modify the Affordable Care Act. While Obama was in office, candidate Trump promised to get rid of Obamacare if he won, and it was a major plank in the 2016 Republican Party platform. And of course, this one's a little out of date, because now we're seeing bits of the new Trumpsurance. And speaking for myself, Trumpsurance has some interesting tricks in it. For example, getting rid of maternity care. What was I saying about the war on women? Sixth from the Snopes list, sixth out of 10, H.R. 354 to defund Planned Parenthood. Boy, do they hate Planned Parenthood. From the text, Representative Diane Black, Republican of Tennessee, introduced H.R. 354, the Defund Planned Parenthood Act of 2017, on the 6th of January. Like another version introduced and passed by the House in 2015, the bill would prohibit distribution of federal funds to Planned Parenthood Federation of America or any of its affiliates or clinics for a period of 1 year unless they certify that no funds will go toward providing abortions, except in cases of rape, incest, or life-threatening conditions. H.R. 354 has 133 co-sponsors, all Republicans. Planned Parenthood says abortions comprise only 3% of its total services, a disputed figure, and only around 10% of its clients receive abortions. And, of course, Snopes doesn't say it, but having access to clean, safe, medically advanced abortions means lots of women dead. Great way to keep women in line. H.R. 785, they write, national right-to-work legislation. Many states have enacted so-called right-to-work laws, which prohibit labor unions and employers from requiring workers to join unions or keep jobs. And speaking for myself, what is it about Republicans that they like to label things the opposite of what they are? Right-to-work means destroying a union so you can't get paid as much. There won't be as much money going into the economy where you're at. There will be fewer jobs. Right-to-work destroys jobs. But Snopes writes, the National Conference of State Legislatures explains currently 28 states in Guam have given workers a choice when it comes to union membership. Labor unions still operate in those states, but workers cannot be compelled to become members as a requirement of their job. Kentucky became the 27th right-to-work state when it enacted HB1 on January 9th, 2017. Missouri became the 28th. And that was on February 2nd, 2017. Unlike many other items on their agenda, they write, the Republican sponsors of H.R. 785 are keen on handing over the power to decide this matter to the federal government instead of the states. Speaking for myself, what happened to states' rights? Interesting how that disappears where it's convenient. But returning to Snopes, opponents say passage of the bill would lead to lower wages and greater unemployment nationwide, not to mention create an unfair situation in which non-dues-paying employees reap the benefits of union activities. Again, speaking for myself, had a union job for a long time, would have been half the wages, wouldn't have had health insurance without the union. And that's true for all of you. If you want to get ahead in life, form a union. How do you do that? It's easy these days. Look up, how do I form a union on the web? Use a search engine. Returning to Snopes, number 8 of 10, H.R. 83, mobilizing against sanctuary cities. H.R. 83, introduced by Representative Lou Barletta, Republican of Pennsylvania, and co-sponsored by 9 Republicans, would punish so-called sanctuary cities such as San Francisco, Los Angeles, New Orleans, New York City, and speaking for myself, and Portland, who refused to comply, they write, with certain federal immigration policies, such as handing over undocumented immigrants for deportation. The bill provides that any local jurisdiction that does not comply with federal immigration regulations shall be ineligible to receive federal financial assistance for a minimum period of 1 year. Confusingly, 2 days after H.R. 83 was introduced on 23rd of January, President Trump signed an executive order designed to do the same thing. Critics argue that the order is unconstitutional. Ninth, H.R. 147, to criminalize abortion in certain cases by making it a felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. The Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act of 2017 was H.R. 147 was introduced on the 3rd of January by Representative Trent Franks, Republican of Arizona. With 59 co-sponsors, all Republicans, the bill, similar to ones introduced in previous sessions of Congress, would not criminalize abortion per se, contrary to how it has been represented in some sources, but would make it a crime under certain conditions. This bill imposes criminal penalties on anyone who knowingly or unknowingly attempts to perform an abortion, knowing that the abortion is sought based on the sex, gender, color, or race of the child or race of a parent. Second, use force or the threat of force to intentionally injure or intimidate any person for the purpose of coercing a sex selection or race selection abortion. Third, solicit or accept funds for the performance of such an abortion. Or fourth, transport a woman into the United States or across state line for the purpose of obtaining such an abortion. Yeah, that's what it says. Transport a woman. Violations or intimidation, excuse me, there was a Freudian slip. Oh, I've got a nice lace one today. Violations or attempted violations shall result in fines and or imprisonment for up to 5 years. And 10th, H.R. 808, sanctions against Iran. Introduced on the 1st of February by Representative Peter Roskam, of Illinois, a Republican, of course, places non-nuclear sanctions on Iran to, in co-sponsor Lee Zeldin's words, assist with efforts to reduce Iran's destabilizing activities, which included a missile test just this week. I'm quoting Republicans, so don't expect me to be grammatical here, that violated a UN resolution, as well as their continued work to overthrow foreign governments pledged to wipe Israel off the map, chanting death to America in their streets, and so much more. So you can find that at Snopes.com. Those 10 items snuck through, and Snopes gives it a mostly true. Time is 9:19. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm going to give you an imperialism update. I'm going to ask for your calls, comments, and questions at 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. U.S.-backed Syrian forces said on Thursday they were closing in on Islamic State-held Raqqa and expected to reach the city outskirts in a few weeks as a U.S. Marines artillery unit deployed to help the campaign. Now, that's the way they phrase it from Reuters. What's really happening is that 500 Marines in their artillery unit have been put between thousands on each side, opposing forces who are both sponsored by the United States. The Marines are expected to keep the peace, and they are putting big American flags on their tanks and armored personnel carriers. What could go wrong? The Syrian Democratic Forces, Reuters writes, a militia alliance including the Kurdish YPG, is the main U.S. partner in the war against the Islamic State in Syria. Since November, it has been working with the U.S.-led coalition to encircle Raqqa. That makes it seem clearer, doesn't it? It just, you know, it's kind of hard. I imagine it's hard for the Reuters journalists to make any sense of this. But they're kind of required, since it is Reuters, and Reuters means money, to make it seem rational. And there ain't nothing rational about it. I'm sorry to say. It's a bloody affair. And SDF spokesman, they write, Tal al-Silo said, quote, we expect that within a few weeks there will be a siege of the city, end quote. So much more on that article. 400 strong additional Marine deployment, which arrived in recent days, comprised both Marines and Army Rangers. Coalition spokesman, U.S. Air Force Colonel John Dorian, said that is temporary. They're there temporarily. Again, I say, what could go wrong? Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Debbie's on the air. Oh, Betty, excuse me, Betty's on the air. Hello, Betty.
Good morning, Teresa. Thank you for this opportunity to say something I feel very strongly about.
All right, then.
It has to do with your comment about women as single mothers. I was a single mother. I raised a son. I'm here to tell you that women cannot model a male identity. When my son started being concerned about his identity as a male, I could not offer anything helpful. Fathers are the only people that can do that. Males are the only people.
Good point.
There's a very good book by James Herzog called Father Hunger, where he goes into this in a lot of detail. And the things that mothers cannot serve are questions of, as a boy, where do I fit in? What does it mean to be a male? How do I fit into the male world? What are my functions? And males and fathers are the only ones who could do this. My son ended up very angry because of having to form his own identity without a lot of help, and he's in middle age, still angry. So fathers are essential. Single mothers, it's fine, you can do it.
I don't think I've said anything against that.
No, I'm not arguing. Right. I'm just saying this is something that is, you know, it's easy to pop out a baby. That's nothing. I did it. But that's not the whole picture. And I think women don't realize this when they get pregnant and deliver a child.
Well, good points there. Any recommendations from you?
Yes, I would like to see society get more behind fathers and let them know that their role is essential. I have never heard anybody say that, not even on Father's Day.
Well, that kind of makes sense to me. I would frame it a little differently. I would say that it takes humans to raise a child, and that role has been excessively disproportionately, the word that Republicans cannot hear, disproportionately shoved onto women, and grossly disproportionately, so that women are saddled with and blamed for everything related to child care. But then I already said that, so pardon me for repeating myself.
And, do you have a child?
I do.
Male or female?
Female.
Okay, it's maybe more than a little different. For boys, when children get into adolescence, because of hormones and because of so many questions, all hell breaks loose.
Well, there's that.
I don't know if your daughter has hit that yet, gone beyond it or what, but it's more than raising a child, because one of your tasks is to help the child with identity formation.
Well, that's true, and, where was that guy? Hey, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking about what the Republicans have been up to. As the item said, as attention has been pointed to the Russians. On the whole Russian-Trump affair, I tend towards the idea that the Trump organization is motivated by money, as it always has been. There's been some finger-pointing towards Trump's bailout some years ago by members of the what they call Russian oligarchy, which are very much inveigled in the government there. I think when everything's sorted out, it'll be about money. It'll be about connections with Russia, with they loaned him, what conditions they expected, that sort of thing. Be interesting to find out, won't it? Number call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about imperialism and the fact that the U.S. presence in the Middle East has been expanding as 500 U.S. personnel are in Syria, interposed between warring U.S.-supported factions. And that's how crazy things are there, as everyone competes for territory in Syria. I say everyone, several factions, including the Sunni militias. I think the U.S. was trying to set up a Sunni stand to pose what is viewed in the Pentagon as a balance against the now Iranian Shia-influenced government in Iraq. And, of course, dividing up Syria. I think it's rather unfair to use the term Islamic militant as much as it is used. It's not really accurate. It's not any more accurate than calling Klansmen Christian militants. Can you imagine if they were called that all of the time? So I was thinking, what would be a perfectly unfair term that applied to everyone fighting there? The mostly Christian U.S., the Saudis, the Saudi-backed forces, just everyone there. I could say, and the Jews, you could say, well, those are Abrahamic militants fighting against each other. They are all factions of the religion of Abraham. Just a fact. Abrahamic militants at each other's throats. But, of course, that would oversimplify. And it's really about oil speculation. And it's really about arms sales. Number call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And Linda's on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Thanks for inviting me on. I really like your show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to call in today to let your listeners know about an organization, revolutiontruth.org, and we are currently suing President Trump in a case called Jumping Eagle versus Trump, and this is in regards to the Dakota Access Pipeline. As many of your listeners probably know, the easement was granted, and that was in fact due to President Trump's illegal overstepping of his powers of the executive branch and forcing the Army Corps to grant the easement with his executive order. So we're going to be challenging him in federal court to stop the flow of oil. and to stop his overreaching grab for power.
Interesting.
If your listeners would like to know more, if you would, you can go to revolutiontruth.org. We'll be in D.C. this weekend with the Native Nations March and with a live panel with three of our plaintiffs and our lead counsel.
Okay.
Look that up at Jumping Eagle versus Trump.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that information.
Thank you. Did you have any questions about what we're doing?
Well, no, I think an announcement will do. It's pretty close to on topic, but it's, you know, slightly off the topic I was intending, so I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, well, I appreciate you giving me some airtime for that. Thank you.
You're welcome. From ProPublica.org, a Trump campaign aide who argues that Democrats committed ethnic cleansing in a plot to liquidate the white working class is one of those who's been sneaked into the federal government. And the way this is done, presidents do it generally, but this is a large-scale thing under Trump, is that, I'm speaking for myself here, the federal government, the president can get people appointed and hired in various federal agencies, and it really doesn't matter what they, whether they're qualified or not, if they're just there to check things for the president. You know, they can be in the office of wall watching. From ProPublica, a former reality show contestant whose study of societal collapse is one of those inspired him to invent a bow and arrow come survivalist multi-tool. It includes a pair of healthcare industry lobbyists, a lobbyist for defense contractors, an evangelist and lobbyist for Palantir. The evangelist in quotation marks, that was his job definition. That's the Palantir is a Silicon Valley company whose close ties to intelligence agencies is known. And there was also a New Hampshire Trump supporter who only recently graduated from high school. These are some of the people the Trump administration has hired for positions across the federal government, according to documents received by ProPublica through public records requests. While President Trump has not moved to fill many jobs that require Senate confirmation, he has quietly installed hundreds of officials to serve as his eyes and ears at every major federal agency, from the Pentagon to the Department of the Interior. Unlike appointees exposed to the scrutiny of the Senate, members of these so-called beachhead teams have operated largely in the shadows, with the White House declining to publicly reveal their identities. While some names have previously dribbled out in the press, ProPublica writes, we are publishing a list of more than 400 hires, providing the most complete accounting so far of who Trump has brought into the federal government. So I'm going to go down that list a little bit and read some more of that article, which is at ProPublica.org. Meantime, you can call me at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Dennis is on the air.
Hello. Yes, I have a comment about the Russian hacking, but I wanted to say, I mean, that was what I had planned to talk about, and I will say something about that in a minute, but these 10 points were these Republicans, these bills that are just supported by Republicans and possibly passed, that's frightening, really, I mean, because no one's paying attention to it. Okay, so my comment about hacking is, this is something I just heard that I think I heard it on the KBOO, that when something is hacked, there's something called a mark. That's in, I put that in quote. That's left, and they say that in the cases of the hacking that they found that there was no mark, and so they say, well, gee, that means the information was leaked instead of hacked. Do you know anything about this? I don't know. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, well, I can't say that I know much about computer technical details. However, if you use a program to hack a computer, and if you infect the computer with it, and you expect to extract information in that manner with the program sitting there on the computer, then, of course, someone searching the computer for that information can find it. Computers being as complex as they are, you have to know what you're doing and what you're searching for, because there's simply too much information for an even on this simple thing that I use to write out my little tablet that I use to write out my programs. So, yeah, if something's hacked in that sense, if a worm, that's an old term, but if a program has been sent into the computer, then the program can be found. The Vault 7 release from WikiLeaks shows that the CIA is so deep into espionage of everyone that every cell phone available, every operating system has been sort of pre-hacked by the CIA in what they call a day zero. I think it's called day zero hack. In other words, the things are compromised before you ever turn them on. And that's how they get around certain anti-hacking, pro-privacy techniques. And it's worth looking up Vault 7 and WikiLeaks on a news search engine because the details are pretty shocking, including that journalist, I'm going to say his name was Hastings, I think it was Hastings, a few years ago, I think it was 2013, who died in a mysterious car crash after very severely exposing General McChrystal and being in the process of doing major exposés of powerful people in the United States and around the world, complained that he was being followed by the FBI investigated by the FBI, went to his neighbor and asked to use her car because he thought his car had been somehow compromised, then died in a fiery car crash in which his car suddenly sped up to its maximum speed, was seen throwing sparks and smashed into a tree and exploded into a fireball so intense that his body was largely incinerated and all the computers on board were also incinerated. And so this Vault 7 release includes information that that sort of thing just the next year was mentioned by the CIA as a handy way, or I should say that sort of thing. What was mentioned was that cars could be hacked, and a car such as the one he had could be hacked by satellite. And if you really want to find out about that, you can find a video of a car that is being hacked by a man with a laptop, and it's pretty shocking. It can be done, and I imagine it can be done in 2013. So that raises additional questions. But it's creepy, isn't it? And as I said many times about the CIA, it has its own non-scrutinizable, has its own black budget of many, many billions of dollars. It does whatever the hell it wants. And they have power that has been, I would say, they have greater power than any secret police agency ever has had. And I think they mean to be terrifying, and they succeed at it. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I was talking about people who have been appointed by President Trump and his people at agencies across the federal government. This is one way in which the fox in the hen house sort of attitude takes grip. It's an indicator of how much power the executive branch has. And returning to the article for ProPublica, the White House said in January that around 520 staffers were being hired for the so-called beachhead teams. And ProPublica writes, "The list we obtain includes obscure campaign staffers, contributors to Breitbart, and others who have embraced conspiracy theories, as well as dozens of Washington insiders who could reasonably be characterized as part of the swamp Trump pledged to drain. The list is striking for how many former lobbyists it contains," and they write, "they found at least 36, spanning industries from health insurance and pharmaceuticals to construction, energy, and finance. Many of them lobbied in the same areas that are regulated by the agencies they have now joined." And ProPublica, they say, has that figure is almost certainly an undercount, since they write they only included those who formerly registered as lobbyists, a process increasingly avoided by many in Washington. During the campaign, Trump said he would have no problem banning lobbyists from his administration, but they have nonetheless ended up in senior roles, aided by Trump's weakening of Obama-era ethics rules that modestly limited lobbyists' role in government. The White House didn't respond to requests for comment from ProPublica, and they write, "There are many former congressional staffers, several top officials from the George W. Bush administration, and even a handful of holdovers from the Obama administration. That list also includes at least eight staffers drawn from the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank that forged close ties to the new administration during the transition. They write much about the role of the beachhead teams at various federal agencies is unclear, but close observers of the early weeks of the Trump administration believe they have taken on considerable influence in the absence of high-level political appointees. Quoting Jeff Hauser, director of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, if the public and Senate is in the dark about a team created without a Senate confirmation process, no one will be permitted to shed light on who is hopelessly conflicted or who is obviously unqualified and who is both, end quote. The beachhead team members are temporary employees serving for stints of 4 to 8 months, but many are expected to move into permanent jobs. The Trump administration's model is based on plans developed but never used by the unsuccessful presidential campaign of Mitt Romney. Pardon me. You're listening to Press Watch at KBOO Portland, and I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is called Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. You're invited to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Talking about Trump's beachhead teams, which involve people with considerable authority over the federal government. That's a quote from Max Steyer, the CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, a nonpartisan group that advises presidential candidates on smooth transitions. And he says, quote, we need clarity about what they're doing and what their role is going to be, end quote. The Obama administration also hired temporary staffers after the inauguration, but Trump has brought in many more. Steyer said, the new list of names was provided to ProPublica by the Office of Personnel Management, the government's human resources agency, and they write they received additional names from other federal agencies in response to the Freedom of Information Act requests. At least a few people on the list have changed agencies or left the administration, including, for example, the young Department of Housing and Urban Development staffer who was fired after his anti-Trump writings during the campaign came to light. So here are some of the Trump hires. Again, the number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. First, the Breitbart. Curtis Ellis was a columnist for WorldNet Daily, a website best known for its enthusiastic embrace of the false notion that President Obama was born outside the United States. The column headlined "The Radical Left's Ethnic Cleansing of America," won Ellis an admiring interview with Steve Bannon, now Trump's top aide. He is a longtime critic of trade deals such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Ellis was hired January 20th as a special assistant to the Secretary of Labor Department, and asked about his role in a brief phone interview Tuesday. He said, nothing I can tell you. John Perdue, a self-described guerrilla warfare expert and fellow at a little-known security think tank, wrote a book called The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. He's also a one-time contributor to Breitbart. Perdue was featured on CNBC's reality series Make Me a Millionaire Inventor for his invention, the Pack Bow, which Perdue came up with while studying collapsed societies. This is a quote from him, and what people who lived in those societies came up with to either defend themselves or to survive, end quote. It's a bow and arrow that doubles as a compass, a tent pole, I suppose like any bow and arrow, a walking stick, a spear fishing rig, and water purification, tablet receptacle, and radio, and no, I'm making up that last part. Perdue was hired as a special assistant at the Treasury Department. The agency didn't immediately respond to a request for comment from ProPublica. And continuing with the ProPublica article, John Jaggers ran the Trump campaign in Maryland and Virginia, where he made headlines for endorsing the conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton was very, very sick, and they're covering it up. As he put it last August, quote, the woman who seeks to be the first female president of the United States wears a wool coat at every single thing. Have you ever stopped to wonder why? It's a big deal, folks, end quote. Jaggers was hired January 20th as senior advisor at the General Services Administration, which oversees tens of billions of dollars of government procurement every year. But records show he left the job on March 3rd. He declined to comment. Then they have a category of swamp denizens, including healthcare lobbyists. And they write, Alexandra Campo, hired at the Department of Health and Human Services, was formerly a lobbyist in Washington for the law firm Cozen O'Connor. According to disclosure records, her firm's clients included a licensee of insurance giant Blue Cross Blue Shield and Fresenius Medical Care, a German company that specializes in medical supplies for renal dialysis. And speaking for myself, you know how expensive that is and how much money they're making. And so there you have it. Lobbyist for Blue Cross Blue Shield, now hired at the Department of Health and Human Services. to basically be a spy for Trump. Going down the list, Timothy Clark, a senior advisor to Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, ran his own political consulting firm in California. His past clients included Pharma, the powerful trade group that represents the pharmaceutical industry. That's actually PHRMA. There's Keegan Linehan, who was also a senior advisor to Price, was a director of government relations at McKesson Specialty Health, a firm that supports independent health providers. Disclosure records show Linehan directly lobbied Health and Human Services. For Linehan, the new post represents a return trip through the revolving door between government and the private sector and a reunion with an old boss. Before registering as a lobbyist, she was a senior legislative assistant for Price when the now HHS secretary was in Congress. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm talking about the very organized corruption of the federal government and the extension of Trump's power through the federal government through the hiring of the beachhead team. Asked about the three HHS staffers, an agency spokeswoman said, "We are not confirming or commenting on personnel at this time." That's the federal government. Speaking for myself, that's the federal government actually saying that they're not going to confirm or comment. And I think that's pretty darn sleazy. Number to comment or question with your 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Justin McCullay, hired at the Department of Defense, was previously a registered lobbyist for Palantir. His title at the tech firm was, quote, evangelist, end quote. McCullay lobbied for the procurement and deployment of the Palantir government software platform throughout intelligence and defense agencies, according to disclosure records. He is now at the Department of Defense, representing Trump, and they write, McCullay was a speechwriter to the Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta between 2011 and 2013, according to his LinkedIn profile. McCullay also previously served as speechwriter for the current Secretary of Defense James Mattis. He declined to comment. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and Jack is on the air.
Yeah, in response to Dennis' interest, his inquiry about the hacking and so forth, I could direct him to an article published yesterday on consortiumnews.com. Title of the article, Fresh Doubts About Russian Hacking. I'm not going to give the entire URL. It's too long and complicated. But if you just Google Fresh Doubts About Russian Hacking by Robert Perry, consortiumnews.com, it'll come up pretty quick. Just a quick overview. The gauzy allegations of Russia, quote-unquote, hacking the Democrats to elect Donald Trump just got hazier with the WikiLeaks new revelations about CIA cyber spying and the capability
to pin the blame on others.
Blame on others, right, reports Robert Perry. It's a rather long article. I won't go to details there, but he's consulting with people who do know and taking information from the leaks that have come out and adds new depth, I think, to the discourse. So this deep state faction fight that's going on, unfortunately, is probably going to get bigger and worse and scarier, and hopefully the White Hats will win.
I don't know what to think about all this, except that I think you're right. There's so much going on. I'm worried about the aggression towards North Korea. I invite people, as I have frequently done over the decades, to remember that North Koreans are people and that South Koreans are people, and that if a war is sparked between North and South Korea, it'll be principally Koreans that die. And we're talking about, it's estimated within the first 5 minutes, 1 million people could die from artillery strikes and missile strikes. So this is not a thing to be risked. But it is being risked. It's being risked by gigantic, as North Korea says, I hate to say that they're right about something, but North Korea points out that they're practicing nuclear warfare. And it's intended to drain them. It's intended to encourage them to pour all of their resources into their military with the thought that this will work as it supposedly did against Russia by causing them to just give up after a while from exhaustion. I think it's a screwy strategy, but it's being worsened now by the Trump administration and by all these press articles that print information about North Korea's missile launches, for example, without pointing out that they don't have orbital capacity. They could not orbit a softball at this point. Or if they could, that would be all that they could possibly manage with a one-time shot. They don't have the capacity to launch an ICBM at the United States, nor are they likely to anytime soon, because it takes a hell of a lot of money to develop that sort of capacity. And under the circumstances, which are pretty grim when you think of how many people are hungry in North Korea, under the circumstances, they've done pretty darn well with their rocket program, but it still isn't a threat to the United States. It's a threat to Korea. And if Korean people matter, then why are we risking war there?
Well, it's hard to say who's behind what's going on. The spookosphere is pretty scary and not accessible to most of us. Like I said, hopefully whatever comes out, there are some white hats who are looking out for the citizenry and for the Constitution. We know there's plenty of black hats, but just cross your fingers.
That's all you got right now. Yeah, I have to agree with that as far as it goes. But that's why I come out and say, we have to start over. We need a revolution in this country. Thank you very much for your call. Remember to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Yeah, I'd like to see a new constitution. And I do believe that we, the people, could come up with a pretty good one with a good non-capitalist delegate selection process. I was talking about people who've been hired by the Trump administration at federal agencies across the United States. And going back to the ProPublica article, the beachhead teams, as they're called, involve people with considerable authority over the federal government. And he said we need clarity about what they're doing, what their role is going to be. And so ProPublica has published a list of some of those people. Let me skip ahead on the article there. Lobbyists for the Construction Agency Trade Association and financial services firm Transamerica are on the Trump team at Department of Labor. The list also includes what appear to be dozens of former Trump campaign staffers, including several who graduated from college last year. One, Danny Tiso at the Department of Labor, graduated from high school in 2015. According to his LinkedIn profile, he works for the Trump campaign in New Hampshire. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Seth Harris, who was on the first Obama-Biden transition team and later became a top Labor Department official, said it's not uncommon to bring in campaign staff to agencies. He says, so long as there are senior political people to direct the junior people, and that's how you incorporate people, he said. And Brian is on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Thank you.
I've been an activist for a long time, and one thing I learned a long time ago, at least it seems a lesson to me, is at the level of the kind of the spook community, they have so many ways to smoke and mirrors and deflect and detract. When they want to make it, it makes it impossible for us to know what's really going on.
It's that sort of thing that makes me say that we are ruled as opposed to we have democracy, but go ahead.
Correct. And I would recommend Consortium News, as the last gentleman said. One thing I think that when you said revolution, that's what kind of popped me into jumping on the phone. And I too think we need some kind of revolution, but it's really important that we figure out, like, what are the problems with our current society? Because it's bigger than, I mean, all of the problems are interrelated. Poverty, pollution, instability, militarism, racism, sexism, they all meld together. And one of the things I think about a revolution, when I hear the term, I mean, I know we need change and we need radical change, but one of the changes I think we need is a decentralization, is the fact that there's not one right way for humans to live. And one of the problems of our society, of going back thousands and thousands of years to the Europeans is they've always believed there's one right way to live. They know it, and everybody should be made to live like them. And so when they got to America, you know, or any place, what do? The first thing they do is start making sure that everybody lives like them, and otherwise they destroy them.
The imposition of ideology through hierarchy, something to consider, surely.
Yeah, I don't even know. It even goes deeper. But, I mean, it's yes, that's part of it. It's also just like it's a belief in our minds, and even the people who talk revolution. Okay, what they generally have is a one right way to live, but it's a different one right way to live. And it's their way.
Well, right? Many years ago, I met with a group of people here at KBOO, and it was after the collapse of the Communist Party, and we decided that communists just didn't have it together for very basic reasons. So we responded to a call for committees of correspondence. And, you know, that still exists in a very small way. But I mention that because this sort of thought's been going on for a while. And I have confidence that people generally can come up with a better way to live. Not the perfect way to live, but a better way. I think that we can do it. And Angela Davis actually is the one member of committees of correspondence that I can think of that is known generally.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them. And I remember them being around and those things. But anyway, yep, I just think one of the things we have to learn and reject is that there's one right way for humans to live. Indigenous people on this continent have thousands of ways to live, and they knew it, and they respected it, and that's the answer. So thank you. I'll take it off the rest of the air. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your opinion. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about how the Trump administration has been trying to corrupt the entire federal government to project its power. I would just say that they were projecting their power, except that they are so very corrupt. And as I was pointing out at the beginning of this broadcast, they're very sexist. And to vote for Trump after he groped his own daughter on stage at the Republican convention, a tape that you can find on YouTube, after his admissions of pussy grabbing, was a very sexist act. It was very sexist. It was very rapey to vote for Trump. And the fact that millions of women did it doesn't change that fact. It's just called the internalization of one's own oppression. Number call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I was also talking about the war in Syria, which has just been worsened by the injection of 500 U.S. Marines in an artillery group, which, as I was mentioning before, had been interjected between larger warring factions, both of which are supported by the United States, and hoping that they will not be shot up by both sides. American tanks and armored personnel carriers have been going around with big American flags attached to them, as if to say, hey, don't shoot over here. We're on both your sides, even though you hate each other. And as I was saying, what could go wrong? Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187 from Patrick Coburn. In Counterpunch, winners and losers are emerging in what may be the final phase of the Syrian civil war as anti-ISIS forces prepare for attack aimed at capturing Raqqa, the de facto ISIS capital in Syria. Kurdish-led Syrian fighters say they have seized part of the road south of Raqqa, cutting ISIS off from its other territory further east. ISIS is confronting an array of enemies approaching Raqqa, but these are divided with competing agendas and ambitions. The Syrian Democratic Forces, whose main fighting force is the Syrian Kurdish Popular Mobilization Units, backed by a devastating firepower of the U.S.-led air coalition, are now getting close to Raqqa and are likely to receive additional U.S. support. And Patrick Coburn writes, the U.S. currently has 500 special operations troops in northeast Syria and may move in American-operated heavy artillery to reinforce the attack on Raqqa. And I think that last phrase may be superseded by today's news. He writes, this is bad news for Turkey, whose military foray into northern Syria called Operation Euphrates Shield began last August, as it is being squeezed from all sides. In particular, an elaborate political and military chess game has been played around the town of Manbij, captured by the SDF last year. If you're wondering who the SDF is, that's the Syrian Democratic Forces that I mentioned before, with the aim of excluding Turkey, which had declared it to be its next target. The Turkish priority in Syria is to contain and, if possible, reduce or eliminate the power of Syrian Kurds, whom Ankara sees as supporting the Kurdish insurrection in Turkey. Did that make things clear to you? It didn't make things clear to me. That's how confusing the situation is there. But I think I can say generally, the U.S., for the sake of profit, for the sake of oil speculation and arms sales, has created the whole mess, basically. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine here on KBOO Portland, where we reach you by 90.7 FM on the airwaves and 90.7, KBOO.FM on the web, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. Thank you for joining us on this rainy Thursday. It is KBOO Portland. We're about an hour from Between the Covers today, welcoming author Kathy Camper and her series Lowriders to the Center of the Earth, about a trio of friends who experience out-of-this-world adventures in their quest to build the most epic lowrider. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures, today an encore presentation of Renters' Rights Comics, an informational comic with an aim to educate renters. But first, we've got we've got flashpoints at 10:15, but before that, it is Chris Andre hosting Air Cascade with headlines, interviews, and commentary, and that is just a couple minutes away. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.